This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Yesterday, we heard from a panel of local leaders at our Across the Divide event. We looked at the Me Too movement and the cultural conversation we're having about gender, sexual politics, and harassment.
Although much of the focus of the Me Too movement has been on high-profile perpetrators and victims, our panelists discussed what sexual harassment can mean to those without a platform.
Milwaukee PBS and the Neighborhood News Service have joined forces to cover what sexual harassment looks like in Milwaukee workplaces. Joanne Williams and Elizabeth Baker are both reporting for the series, and they joined Lake Effect's Joy Powers in studio. Williams said that while this movement is currently in the limelight, its roots are much deeper.
It's always been around. I think now women are realizing that what happened to them or what happened to a coworker, no matter what year it was not right. And after Harvey Weinstein and the big celebrities in Hollywood started speaking up, then women all over the country started saying, hey, me too, even though they may not have told anybody or reported it. And I think we'll find in the subsequent months and years that this has happened to many, many, many women, and a few men.
How has the movement played out so far in Milwaukee? I know we're really just, in some ways, at the beginning of this issue, but how is it playing out right now?
Well, you know, Tempo did that survey, the Women's Management and Executive Organization, and they did a survey that found, what was it, more than 60% of the people who answered the survey either had been affected by sexual harassment or knew somebody who had been affected by sexual harassment, and many of them were middle managers and managers. Their experiences often came at the entry level, which we're finding is common because younger women just coming into the workforce don't really know what to expect and have not experienced anything like this before, and they don't really know what to do. So after Tempo did that survey, which people were sort of surprised to find out, oh my goodness, it's happening here in Milwaukee. And these are some women who were bosses who are saying it happened to them. They're looking back at their own organizations and their own jobs and saying, did it happen to somebody I know? Did it happen to me? Will it happen to me?
Do you think there are people who are hearing these stories and asking themselves, has it happened to me? We've kind of been at this level of complacency for a while of brushing off these comments and brushing off these kind of odd moments. Are there people who are taking the moment to say, what has my working career been like?
Let's hope there are. Let's hope there are people who look back at where they've worked and the people with whom they've worked and said, you know, that incident in the break room with so-and-so, I didn't like it and it made me feel uncomfortable. That was sexual harassment. And that incident in the hall where I saw my coworker being semi-accosted by another coworker, that was sexual harassment. So let's hope that they're looking back and saying, there are people I know, and maybe it's me too.
And I think that another part of it is a lot of people are looking back years and years and years. So as they hear more and more stories, I think that these situations, these circumstances affect different people in different ways for a number of reasons. But, you know, for some people, it might be an incident that has stuck with them very dramatically. But for other people, for whatever reason, it hasn't. But then they look back and they realize that work environment wasn't right.
Now, the piece that you did for the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service, you spoke with a woman named Angel, and I think her story really speaks to one of the big questions skeptics have about sexual harassment. They go, well, why wouldn't you just report right away? And in one case, she did report, and in one case, she didn't. Can you go through that story a little bit?
Right. So in the first case, she did decide to report it, and the company sent an HR representative or someone like that from management to kind of assess the situation and see what was going on. And she was hoping maybe they'll transfer me to a different location in the city. She was at a fast food restaurant. And she had been there for, I think she said, 4 years. And she had the meeting, told them the story, and she was fired. So then when she got a new job and a very similar situation happened, another fast food restaurant, she just decided, you know, I can't risk. She was a young single mom at the time, and she just decided I can't risk getting fired again like that. So she decided not to report it and just quit eventually. After a while, she quit and found another job.
How many people have you spoken to who have given you firsthand accounts? How many people have you spoken to so far?
Well, I talked to, of course, I talked to Jennifer Dirks of Tempo. She told us her experience of having inappropriate things said to her and inappropriate things done in front of her. In the package we did for 1036 for the January show, we also talked to Jean Groh, who is a professor at Marquette University, who used to be in the advertising world. She had her own company, and she dealt with a lot of photographers and artists and people who ordered advertising, and she told stories of how she was chased around rooms by men, and she told the story of one man who took her out to lunch, and they were having a meeting about a particular project, and he slid the hotel key over to her. And she said, no, I don't think I want to do that. And this is somebody she had worked with for a long time, gotten a lot of business from. She never got any more business from him. So the fear is, if you report it, who's going to be punished? Is it the person who perpetrated the harassment, or is it the person, the victim, who reports it? And most of the time, as we've learned, it's the victim who suffers. She has to change her position. She has to shift her hours. She has to leave her job or may even get fired. And for women who are the sole support of their family and of their children, they can't afford that.
Well, with that in mind, with victims, the idea of being blamed for what's happened to you, even inside of these stories that you're telling, so often they choose to be anonymous. They don't say exactly what happened. They don't say exactly who did this to them. What are the kinds of things that you find yourselves having to navigate as you're reporting these stories?
Yeah, at first I was a little surprised that even people who are telling these stories that happened to them 5, 10, even more years than that, that long ago, they still don't want to say the company where they were working, or they don't want their name to be revealed. But then one woman said something that I thought was interesting. She said, you know, since then we've worked so hard to get in our career to where we are today. And once I tell this story, you know, what am I then? So I think that even though there is this whole movement of having power and confidence and coming out with your story, there's still definitely that shame and that embarrassment. That's been a common theme that we've been hearing. People are embarrassed to share these stories. So I think that is really telling.
Well, you know, women have been raised to be quiet and not complain. That's part of what women do. We don't complain. We just work. And I think we fear that if we do complain, not only do we risk losing a job or losing a promotion or losing salary, but we'll be embarrassed by it. And the people that cause the abuse will make us look bad. And other people won't believe us. And I think that's going to take a lot of overcoming. That's going to take a lot of cultural change to accept people just for what they do and who they are. And if they do something wrong, they should be held accountable without the victim being victimized again.
We are seeing this cultural shift, but there's also a number of people who are skeptical of the Me Too movement's sustainability. They're questioning how far can this actually go? And you hear specific stories and instances where critics, you know, they latch on to these moments and say, see, this is why it's a witch hunt, a word that is commonly used with this movement. Have you seen that same skepticism with people you've spoken to about these issues?
I would say I've seen the opposite, actually. I think when you hear these stories about Hollywood and every day it seems like a new person's being blamed, these people don't want to blame any person or organization. They just want to come out with their stories to help other people. And so I think that there's kind of being spread around, you know, people want, they don't want people to feel shame in these circumstances. They want them to be able to identify sexual harassment when it's happening to them and to know their power and their rights that they have. That woman that we were talking about before, Angel, she says, you know, if I knew then what I know now, I would have, you know, had a lawsuit against the company or sued the company because that's not right what happened. And so I think that people are being inspired and they're gaining confidence from the movement, and they're seeing the value in sharing their stories.
Yeah, one of the women that Elizabeth met and talked to, and we sat and talked to together, talked about what happened and then talking about it or not talking about it. And she said, it made me feel bad, like we got to go through this just to be able to go to work. And the women we talked to didn't necessarily tell their families until years later. And they want to tell their stories now because so many people, and like Elizabeth said, maybe it will help other people to get the strength to tell their stories. And it has to be a cultural and a whole attitudinal change of the way we relate to each other in business circumstances. We haven't gone into other areas like sports and the military and things like that. Those are whole different stories, but we're talking about people in the workplace. I met somebody in the medical workplace a couple of days ago, and I just randomly said, hey, I'm doing this thing about sexual harassment. Do you ever see that? And she said, all the time. I said, okay. So it's not going to change quickly, but it's going to change, as Jennifer Dirks of Tempo said, when we get men who are advocates for the equality of men and women. And we need more men to become advocates and stand up and say, this isn't right. This shouldn't happen. And we have to have people strong enough to go to their HR departments, and then we have to have HR departments that are strong enough to say, we're going to take care of this, and you're not going to be punished because you came forward.
That was a topic that came up. WUWM just had an event about Me Too, and HR came up, and specifically men being involved with the movement, the necessity for men to be involved. And it was a very long conversation with amazing panelists. And one of the things that I left thinking was there are so many conversations left to be had about the Me Too movement. How are you navigating that with the pieces that you're doing? How are you taking a topic that has so many conversations and kind of narrowing it down?
Well, hopefully in February, on 1036 on Milwaukee PBS, we're going to have a group of women who will tell us their stories. So we'll see some different faces. The two women we talked to in the January story were white upper management women. These women are not upper management. Most of them are probably going to be minorities. And they're in service industries, and so blue-collar jobs. And then in March, when we do another story, it will deal with an HR consulting company that works with businesses. And they're going to tell us about what they're doing to try and educate businesses on how they should handle all this. And we're going to be talking to an attorney who's going to tell us what to do if you feel you want to file a lawsuit, the steps you should take, how long it takes. So we're going to address those different issues in March. And I think that will give people a broader outlook of what there really is to do. You ask about what's going to happen next, the whole Time's Up movement that the people in Hollywood have created and the money they're putting into the Time's Up Fund to help blue-collar women who want to make some sort of case. I think that's an amazing development, too.
When we've been having these conversations with the women sharing their stories, as they start telling their story and they talk about the circumstances and how things have been different since, one woman in particular, she kind of, you know, we asked a question about, were there any sexual harassment policies at the company you were working for? And she's kind of thinking, you know, since then I haven't, you know, places that I work, when you go to orientation, they spend so much time talking about days off and sick leave and things like that. But this is just kind of a topic that's voluntary if you want to read up about it. And they don't make sure you know your rights. So I think that as these conversations are continuing to be had, more and more difficult questions are being asked, but also important.
And I think businesses have to think about their HR policies. Most businesses, we would guess, would have a sexual harassment training. It might be a video that you watch and then you answer a series of questions. It might be a meeting where somebody comes in, a consultant comes in and explains things to you. Sometimes they do a little role playing to show you what the various circumstances could be, and then you have to answer some questions. Businesses are going to have to stop and think seriously about that and whether or not their employees actually took all of that training seriously, or if they just said, yes, I have to answer this questionnaire, I'll check the boxes, we'll go on. Did they think about it? What really could happen or what really does happen? And I think businesses are going to have to think about the kind of training they give their employees so that it does become serious. Because if you lose employees because they feel they're in an unsafe or uncomfortable working environment, then you have to train another employee, and that costs you money. And businesses don't like to have to spend that money training people over and over again. So if businesses think of it as part of their bottom line, maybe they'll take a different point of view, that they should be doing some more serious training and making sure people understand the rules so that they treat each other better and that they can be more successful, and therefore the business can be more successful.
Here's to a successful series, Me Too Movement. Thank you so much, Joanne, for speaking with me, and Elizabeth for coming in and talking about your series.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us.
Joanne Williams is the host of Black Nouveau on Milwaukee PBS, and Elizabeth Baker is the Public Policy Reporting Fellow at the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. Their series on sexual harassment in Milwaukee is airing on 10:36 on Milwaukee PBS with regular written features on the Neighborhood News website.